Hebrews chapter 8. Let's continue on. You know, we left off last week at the word as to know, okay, that they may know. If you highlighted that, you should have highlighted that in verse 11. Okay, so highlight the word know, K-N-O-W. Okay, we'll be discussing that and why the Spirit of the Lord, okay, identifies a certain cognition, okay, of a fulfillment, okay, and why the Spirit does these things. Okay, let's work up to that thought there, and we'll start around verse 10, because we talked about a covenant. Okay, so a particular form of knowledge is necessary in order for us to serve God acceptably. Now we know that Jesus said to Mary, "Touch me not, because I have not yet ascended to my Father and your Father, my God and your God." Jesus was identifying his record that we are only to reciprocate not by the passion and aspiration of man, but by the power of God. So that after Jesus ascended to his Father, right, having presented himself to himself as our record and conscience, then he came back into this dimension and began to teach his apostles and regarding the terms of the second covenant. That is how these things would begin to unfold. So Jesus, speaking these things to his apostles, began to set the tracks in the direction of fulfillment. Okay, for this is the covenant that I'll make with the house of Israel and with the house of in those days, after those days. You see that in verse 10 there. So as we read through in chapter 8, all right, I brought to your attention to highlight the word covenant. Every time you see the word covenant, highlight that. Then you can begin to connect together all these words, okay, the word covenant, okay, which identifies terms of activity, certain forms of engagement, like the rules of a game. When you buy a board game, you follow the terms on that board game in order to achieve the desired outcome. On any board game or football, okay, or soccer or baseball, every game is identified by a certain form of activity in order to achieve a point rating, okay, who the winner is. Okay, well, God has given to us a covenant to identify a form of activity for an overcomer, that we would overcome the contrariness in this world, not by the force of our own nature, okay, but by the power of God. And not by the wisdom of this world, as trying to resolve these things within the powers of your own nature. You cannot overcome fire with fire or water with water. Okay, so God gave us these terms of activity. Now, he identified these terms of activity under Moses as being temporary and passing. Also, he called them weak and unprofitable. They are weak and unprofitable because of the presence of death, and that it will not bring those which engage with those things to a good conscience concerning Christ. But it was pointing the way. It was laying the groundwork and the tracks, okay, for this fulfillment. So he says, "This is a covenant that I will make with them after those days." That is for the house of Israel. Okay, those of faith would engage God on this level, not the level of one's passion, okay, or one's emotion, but on the grounds of truth, the expression of truth and charity. So he says, not according to the covenant, verse 9, not according to the covenant that I made with their fathers. So highlight the word fathers there, because I'm going to draw a line from the word fathers to the word they, okay, in verse 11, to identify who the Apostle Paul is speaking of. Okay, he's identifying they as those of that first covenant and us as concerning the second covenant. Not according to the covenant that I made with their fathers. Okay, that which the Spirit gave them for their earthly kingdom to establish that promise which is given to Abraham, and also the promise that which he gave to Abraham which concerns us has to do with Christ. Their fathers on that day when I took them by the hand, when my angel led them by the hand of my steward. Okay, the angel led them by the hand of my steward, which was Moses. That Moses, okay, was following this angel, which was invisible to the other people. Of course, he manifested himself at times. Moses could see him, but those others, okay, now they didn't see him. Now, of course, we'll be reading about that in chapter 11. Okay, in chapter 11, when the Apostle Paul begins to identify Moses, in chapter 11, verse 27, by faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he, meaning Moses, endured as seeing him, that's the angel, who is invisible. The angel was invisible to the carnal eye, okay, but he was visible to Moses, the same angel that spoke to him on the burning bush. Or he manifested himself in that particular phenomena, that this angel would bring out a new offspring, okay, not the offspring of the flesh, but the offspring of the spirit. So he was in the burning bush, that he would sanctify the dry seed by his presence. Okay, and that's why Jesus also called himself, "I am the true vine, because I sanctify those which are engaged with me." Okay, that which my Father plants, not that which Satan plants. See, Satan plants the weeds or the tares, but I plant the wheat. I plant the good crops. Okay, now back in verse 9, "Not according to the covenant that I made with their fathers in the day when I took them by the hand of my steward, the angel which worked with him to sanctify him and the people, to lead them on the land of Egypt." Now, those that fell in the wilderness fell because of unbelief. Now, the word unbelief, which Paul speaks of here, has nothing to do in regarding the existence of God. They didn't fall in the wilderness because they were atheists. They fell in the wilderness because they opposed Moses, okay, of unbelief. They opposed the stewardship. Those that opposed the stewardship wanted to remain independent to form a philosophy of their own as concerning their place and their future. They wanted to govern their own future without responsibility. And we can see the same thing in the present church today. Those apart from stewardship want to engage in their own future on their own terms. And God will not accept you on your own terms. That's why Paul brings this to our attention. You can't defy the stewardship and follow your own path. You have to follow that which I reveal to my steward. Okay, now this is what happened here. Those of that first covenant, as Dathan, he refused to reciprocate to Moses' authority. And Korah, he volunteered himself to be the next steward. He says, "Well, Moses, okay, God used you only to bring us to this point." And many people preach that today. The apostles were only raised up by God to pen us the epistles, so that we don't need apostles any longer. That's the Korah mindset. We no longer need stewardship, Korah was saying, because we have the law. Okay, you gave us the law, you gave us the priesthood, we can take it from here. And what Korah was going to do was just, okay, impose his aspiration into this knowledge and direct the people as he saw fit, which would make him a false steward. And God confirmed that Korah was a false steward, okay, by the judgments, okay, which manifested themselves. Now, even fire coming off the altar and consuming his supporting faculty. The supporting faculty of Korah's priesthood was not valid, and so they were consumed by fire. So when he said they perished because of unbelief, okay, again, as I'll reiterate, the word unbelief is not in regarding the presence of God. He was talking about resisting the stewardship. Okay, because they continued out of my covenant, resisting the stewardship, which the terms of the covenant included. And we'll be reading about that in the next chapter. Okay, the terms of the covenant included the stewardship. It did not exclude the stewardship. But there are those today which would want to set the stewardship outside of the ark, when God says, no, it's concealed in the ark for this purpose, for the purpose of unity, that we be of all one mind and of one heart. Being united together, we beat with one heart. Now, because they continue not in my covenant, and I regard them not, saith the Lord, which means I cast them to the heathen. I assign them to destruction. Now, in verse 10, for this is a covenant that I'll make with the house of Israel. And when he says the house of Israel, he is speaking or addressing those of faith. The epistles, which the apostles wrote, were to the house of Israel. Okay, it was not written to the house of Gentiles. That means, just because they were illuminated, just because Pharaoh witnessed the phenomena of God, did not qualify him to pass through the Red Sea. And many people today, because they experienced the grace, okay, of that illumination, feel that they are qualified, that they have qualified themselves to pass through the Red Sea. You can't pass through the Red Sea without the stewardship. And we have many today that are trying to pass through the Red Sea apart from stewardship. Now, those that try to pass through the Red Sea apart from stewardship were consumed in the sea. The very door became a trap, like a mouse trap. Okay, the very thing that they desired for their pleasure became a trap of death, as in Pharaoh's case. Okay, so when the Red Sea opened up, two groups of people engaged themselves to pass through it. Those under covenant stewardship and those apart from covenant stewardship. Those which are of great aspiration. They looked at the open door as an opportunity. Whereas when it opened for Moses, it was for deliverance. For it was deliverance to one group of people and destruction to another. And those that read the Bible today, apart from stewardship, see, are in Pharaoh's group. Okay, they're taking things into their own hands for their own deliverance, and they will be consumed. As Jesus said, not all that say, Lord, Lord, shall enter the kingdom of heaven. Okay, so people that try to enter God's kingdom on their own terms will be consumed. Now, this is a covenant, the terms of activity, that I will make with those of faith, house of Israel. That is after those days, after the completion. So the groundwork has already been set. The tracks have already been laid for this fulfillment, as was prophesied through Moses. All the prophets, including Moses, prophesied concerning Christ. The words which they spoke were laying the groundwork and the tracks for the fulfillment of the Messiah to manifest himself. Okay, so that at the time of fulfillment, that assigned sign and present token would fulfill these things, the deeds. The words of the prophet was fulfilled by the deed of Jesus, so that we don't serve him in word only, but also in deed. This is what the Apostle John said, that we don't serve God in word only, okay, and regarding identifying the history, but in word and deed, okay, where we are following the path of tracks. I mean, we are engaged in this direction, going to this fulfillment. Now, for this is a covenant that I'll make with the house of Israel after those days, saith the Lord. I'll put my laws in their mind and write them in their hearts. And this is interesting. Because the one which was written in stone had to do with the frailty of man. It was addressing the frailty of man. That Adamites, okay, in their signature, cannot serve God in that manner. They have to serve him according to the tokens which God gave for faith to be expressed with. That first token, being the signature of man in the moral code, was not qualified, okay, in order to engage God on the level of faith. God had to give us special tokens for that. You know, those that which try to serve God with the token of their own signature, okay, these are what the Bible calls works of debt. We see that in Romans chapter 4, where the Apostle Paul identified the works of debt. Now, if Abraham was accepted on his own person, it would be by the qualifications of his own signature, that he would use the powers of his imagination, which would engage with his signature in order to try to fulfill these things. That, I mean, in other words, Abraham did not initiate these things on his own accord. He was following the directions of the angel that revealed these things to him, and following these directions and instructions, okay, this was called faith. Because faith is reflective, not projective. Well, like that's why we serve God in faith and charity. Okay? Because faith and charity has to do with reflection for expression. Faith and charity, reflection for expression. Faith is reflection, charity is your expression. And Abraham followed that same pattern, reflection for expression. So the laws which God gave to Moses was identifying the behavior of the people, that would bring restriction upon the imagination and provided signs and tokens for their expression of faith. That this expression of faith would lead them to identify the one who was the true token, the imperishable token, a new baptism, which would be Jesus himself. Not that baptism which washed us the hands and the feet, but the baptism that would completely immerse them in his light. A new baptism, which John the Baptist was identifying in his ministry, that the tokens of that first covenant being perishable was going to be fulfilled by the next one that would come. I baptize with water, but he that comes after me shall baptize you with the Holy Ghost and with fire. A new baptism for a new covenant that would be perpetual and fulfilled within himself. that we wouldn't be engaged with all his powers. We would be engaged with all his powers, not the perishable powers, but the eternal powers. That's why the cherubim were above the mercy seat, which is upon the Ark of the Covenant. And we'll get to that as we move on here. So I will put my laws in their mind and write them in their hearts. In other words, I'm going to give them a new conscience with a new perspective. Okay, the things which I'm providing for them on that first covenant cannot purge the conscience because they had to offer these sacrifices yearly, which shows that these things, the things of that first covenant, cannot purge the conscience. Their faith cannot be made perfect. They had faith, but their faith cannot be made perfect in regarding the conscience. That they should have no more memory in regarding the powers, okay, of those things which are past. Not under the shadow of that yoke of guilt. I put my laws in their mind and write them in their hearts, and I will be to them a God. I will be to them a God, which means by these tokens which I'm providing for them to purge the conscience, I'm going to unite them to myself. Instead of uniting them with carnal things, which was the types and shadows, and a sign and token, though they were present, would be consumed at the time of his appearing, a time of Jesus' baptism. I will be to them a God, and they shall be to me a people. They will mirror my likeness, an eternal likeness. Not those things which would perish from one generation to the next, but those things which would be perpetual, which, of course, the prophet Isaiah identified. Okay? And by his knowledge shall my righteous servant justify many. And that a new offspring would come forth from me, from the Spirit. Okay? So they shall be my people by the offspring of the Spirit. We are not identifying with the offspring of the flesh. We're identifying with the offspring of the Spirit. That what makes us a new people. Now, verse 11. They shall not teach every man his neighbor and every man his brother, saying, know the Lord. Now, highlight the word they there in verse 11. Draw a line from the word they to the word them. Verse 9. That I made with their fathers in a day when I took them by the hand, made the Levites. They, the Levites, shall not teach them, that is, by that law, because the Levites preached the law for them to observe this prophecy. They preached the law to observe this prophecy so that by this remembrance, okay, now remember, the Levites were giving them knowledge. This knowledge was a seed. The seed which the Levites were preaching to them, which Moses gave them to preach to the people, was to lie dormant until the time of Jesus' showing. It would lie dormant. And the seed lying dormant would then suddenly be awakened when the voice came from heaven, this is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased. That seed would lie dormant until the awakening would come. And when the awakening would come, they would realize the sign and a token, which was concealed inside the ark, was now manifested, that sprang forth out of the ground. I am here. Okay, we see that in Isaiah 53, where it says, who shall believe our report, and to whom is the arm of the Lord revealed? Speaking of Christ. Who has believed our report? Who will confirm the announcing of the day and the time of visitation? Whose eyes will be opened to confirm the Messiah? So who has believed our report? And to whom is the arm of the Lord revealed? The arm, which has to do with the Messiah. The report, again, the sign and the token coming together. Isaiah 53, okay, was speaking of this time, that this servant, this righteous servant, would be concealed until the time of his showing, that he would be concealed from the carnal eye until the time of his appearing. At the time of his appearing, he was now going to provide a new priesthood through himself. This was the time when he was going to provide the Melchizedek priesthood. And this is what Jesus preached. He preached the Melchizedek priesthood, the knowledge, fulfilling all things which were prophesied of him. Okay, the tracks have been laid, and at the time of his baptism, that was the first station. The train just arrived at the station. The tracks were laid, and John the Baptist was announcing its presence. The train is coming, and I can see it. Okay? Now, verse 11. Now, they shall not teach every man his neighbor and every man his brother, saying, know the Lord. Now, highlight the word know there. Because a sign and token will be manifested at the time when the seed is awakened in the conscience. This is why it's important for the gospel to be preached. Because the knowledge that you share awakens the seed of the heritage which God has implanted in all Adamites. The seed of their heritage is concealed within the conscience. And when the gospel is preached, it awakens that seed to the time of his appearing. Now is the time of salvation. This is the time of your salvation, as Paul brings out. The time of your hearing. Now, John the Baptist announced this. The sign and the living token was manifested at the time when the Father took ownership of him. This is my beloved Son, whom you am well pleased. Now, let's read on here. They, the Levites, their preaching will go no further when this time appears. They shall not teach every man his brother and every man his neighbor, every man his tribe. Okay, nobody's talking about there. They, the Levites. The Levites preached by the law to observe this prophecy until Christ would come. So when Christ came, the scriptures said they shall not teach then at this time. Because the tracks have been laid, the train has arrived, the Melchizedek priesthood has begun. They shall not teach every man his neighbor and every man his brother, saying, know the Lord. Know the Lord, which means his appearing is here, because it's already happened. The train has arrived. Know the Lord, because at the time of his appearing, the prophecy of these things will be fulfilled. Those things which are concealed in the law, in the tokens of Moses. Okay, the tabernacle, the activity of the priesthood, and all the furniture of the tabernacle, the things which are concealed are now manifested in one man, Jesus' ministry. For they all shall know me at the time of my appearing. The saints will be able to identify my presence, but those which look at the law and only see the law will not recognize me, because those which are under the law are under Satan's yoke. They only observe the law for the purpose of the moral code. But the law was to teach them Christ. The law was to preach them as to the concerning the one to come, the report, the steward, the branch that was to come. They would identify the face of God. They would see the face of God in Jesus. Okay, those which are of faith identify the face of God through the stewardship. They shall know me. So the Levites, preaching to the people, the tribes of that time, was to prepare the hearts of the people for the showing. That was the key, which Jesus said, you have. Know the Lord. Okay, the symbols. The symbols in this prophecy was to bring us to the time of his manifestation. For all shall know me from the least to the greatest. From the least to the greatest. That means from the concealed seed to the manifestation of the tree. From the least to the greatest. From the concealed seed to the manifestation of the tree. And Jesus was the tree. And when the tree is manifested, they will partake of his fruit. That's why Jesus said, eat of me. I'm the tree. I'm your fruit. Eat of me. So that which was concealed within the heart was awakened by Jesus' presence. And Jesus' preaching, which is the grace of God, awakened it. Now we can see that in Peter's response to Jesus. Okay, and Jesus says, my Father revealed that to you. Your conscience, the seed which was concealed within you, now has been awakened, and you see God's face in my ministry. Okay, only spiritual eyes can see that, Peter. And Jesus confirmed that at that time. And the other apostles were listening in, okay, and regarding these things. So, and because of this awakening now, I will be merciful to their unrighteousness, and their sins and iniquities will remember no more. You see that in verse 12. Now, when he says the word merciful there, he says, I will be active to remove all offending powers. It doesn't mean that God is ignorant, okay, of your frailty. That's not what he's talking about. God is very much aware of your frailty. But I will remove those powers by my mercy. What powers? Those things which Satan put there to control you. Okay, Satan controlled your perspective by false knowledge. And these seducing spirits worked with that false knowledge and prejudiced the mind and the soul against God. And when the mind and soul is prejudiced against God, it charges God with folly. It does not see the justices that are unfolding in the earth, okay, as being ordained by God. It views all the judgments of God as being in the state of inequity. And it doesn't understand why God is manifesting himself in this manner. That's the ignorant soul. That soul has been prejudiced against God's judgments. And we can see that in the book of Revelation. Okay, in Revelation 9:21, neither repented they of their fornication, nor of their murder, nor of their sorceries, nor of their thefts. Why did they repent of these things? Because once awakened, okay, they refused to accept the tokens. They refused to accept the sign and a token which God gave in the face of the two witnesses and 144,000. They refused those tokens, so they chose ignorance to their own destruction. They were ignorant. They were not innocent. They were ignorant. There's a difference between the two. The innocent, which means those which are free from free of charge. Okay, they were free from God's judgments. Okay, but the ignorant are not free from God's judgments because they chose that ignorance. They chose ignorance over knowledge. Now, I'll be merciful to their unrighteousness, which means I'll be active to remove all these offending powers because of the present failed condition. So God accepts us as concerning only on the grounds of the tokens of his faith. As a sign and a token is in every element, as a sign and a token is also in your faith. You are a sign and a token of God's presence in this dimension. So that's why we continue to choose righteousness, continually, so that we can continually remove these offending powers, okay, which stand against God. For I will be merciful to their unrighteousness, the things that yet remain to be purged, and their sins and iniquities, when I remember no more. Now, the sins and iniquities has to do with the fruits and Satan's origin. Okay, the fruits which you're bearing, you bore fruit for Satan's kingdom. When you stood in your ignorance, you bore fruit for Satan's kingdom. And, of course, and their iniquities, which has to do with Satan's origin. Okay, standing against God's purpose. Just like, now you remember, Peter did that too. Peter also stood against God's purpose. And that's why Jesus rebuked Peter. And he said, "Get thee behind me, Satan." Okay, Peter, you are championing at this moment Satan's perspective. He always stood against my plan. Okay, he always walked contrary and indifferent to my oath because he wanted to establish his own oath. He wanted to be the hub of all life. But now he's the hub of all death because I'm the hub of all life, not him. Okay, he wanted me to worship him. Okay, he wanted me to acknowledge his presence down here as the God. And it was never issued to him in that perspective. But he took ownership of it. Just because he was assigned as an archangel over a third of the angels, he decided to intrude into this dimension and steal from Adam through his cunningness. He stole from Adam that perspective. He robbed Adam of his light, and he gave in place of light the shadow of death, which all sinners have that perspective now, the shadow of death. So their sins and iniquities were remembered no more, the fruits and the origins of Satan's kingdom, which were always indifferent to me, I will remove. How does he remove these things? By the terms of the covenant and your activity of faith in the priesthood, second covenant priesthood. So when he says right here, I remember their iniquities no more, he wasn't talking about as being, okay, in a state of amnesia. Okay, he was talking about as concerning giving them the good conscience. I'm going to give them my conscience. They will see from the perspective of the throne. So he says here, I remember their sins no more, or their iniquities. Their origin has been changed and their fruits have been changed. You changed the origin, you changed the fruit. So I removed, I plucked them from Satan's kingdom. I planted them in mine. And now their fruits, okay, are bringing forth my likeness. And because of this, I gave them a good conscience, my law of grace. Okay, our whole perspective changes, okay, by this law of grace, so that we no longer offend God nor our neighbor. Okay? Now we'll go on here, verse 13. Now, in that he says, in other words, that is in respect to this, in this perspective, God speaks in this manner, a new covenant. So highlight the word covenant again in verse 13. Okay, so you can highlight the word covenant, draw a line from the word covenant there up to the word covenant, verse 10. A covenant, again, these terms of agreement and activity would be manifest in those of faith. So God is making distinction. A difference between those of faith and those that are not of faith, those which are the children of light and those which are the children of darkness. God is making distinction by choice. God is making distinction by choice. If these choose not to bring forth fruit unto me, I will not be their God. Okay, and then he says a new covenant. He makes the first old. Now God has assigned that old covenant. He used the word old here because he's talking about its presence is passing with time. Its grip on your perspective of life diminishes through the presence of my truth. That's why we cannot serve God under those terms of that first covenant. Because people use tithing, baptism, communion, Sabbath day observation, and circumcision as tokens for the conscience. And God says, these are not sufficient tokens for the conscience. Because if they're sufficient tokens for the conscience, then I would reciprocate to that. Okay, and you would see from my perspective, but because you're not seeing from my perspective, it's because your conscience remains unpurged. You stand in Satan's shadow, which is an evil conscience. And being unpurged, you're defiled. Being defiled, you're children of wrath. A new perspective I will give to them, and their perspective will be a divine perspective, a new covenant. Okay, now he has made the first old, and passing of time and week. Now that which decays, which works death, okay, when he says the word decays, has to do with that the maggots feast upon it. Okay, anything that the maggot feasts upon is not sufficient for eternity. It won't last long. It's been only, its powers were only assigned to this dimension of time. But my power is eternal. And so I came into this dimension to give you an eternal token that will carry your soul from this dimension into the next dimension, from smallness to greatness, from darkness to light, from frailty to great power. Okay, as the Apostle Paul brings out in Corinthians there. Okay, in 1 Corinthians 15. Now, a new covenant he has made the first old, and that which decays, which works death, and waxes old and consumes your strength, it waxes old. It only consumes your strength. Everything under that first covenant required a portion. In order for you to gain, you had to suffer loss. So you have to bring all your sacrifices, the tithing of your sacrifices into my tabernacle, and there, in order for you to advance in your society and for peace to rule, you had to suffer loss, and that's what we do today. We suffer loss as concerning the imagination, but we gain through faith. We restrict the imagination and the aspiration by the law of grace. Okay, and the law of grace sets the boundaries for expression and for a force of life, that the God code will work with these tokens which are eternal. And if our God code works with the eternal tokens, we carry these prizes and these virtues and these gifts into the presence of God. And God accepts us only on the terms of Christ. Now that which decays and waxes old is ready to vanish away. That is, it's ready to vanish away by this new covenant, because this new covenant is going to give your will a new power. Okay, and this new power is a good conscience, that you don't reflect upon your shortcoming, you reflect upon faith, you reflect upon the words of the Lord. The things which God spoke to the children of Israel was for them to reflect upon in the time of their confrontation. When contradiction presents itself, I want you to reflect upon my word. That's what Jesus told his apostles. Peter, I prayed for you that your strength fail not. Peter, reflect upon this knowledge which I'm giving to you. 3 days from now, I'm going to rise from the dead. I want you to reflect upon that for your strength. And by this knowledge, I want you to strengthen your brethren. Okay, when you're converted, strengthen your brethren. That's what he said. When you're converted, strengthen your brethren. You must reflect upon this knowledge for a new perspective in order for you to overcome. Because Satan is making war. He's waging war against you by presenting false knowledge. False knowledge is in the aspiration, the imagination of man. Its existence is only in things which are evident to the carnal eye. That's why we don't walk by that which is of the carnal eye. We walk by that which is of the kingdom of God. We walk not by sight, but by faith. You remember the Apostle Paul brings that out. If we walk by sight, then we project with the imagination the circumstances and outcome. But we don't walk by sight, we walk by faith. That which the Spirit reveals is what we reflect upon for strength of the soul. And by this, we maintain a good conscience, that we don't try to assess our value in the light of our failure. We assess our faith in the light of God's Word, that which He has revealed. So we stand in his strength. This is what Moses did when he told the children of Israel. At a point of desperation and frustration, they tried to achieve the goals on their own merit of aspiration. And upon trying to achieve these goals, Moses warned them, "Don't go there. The Lord is not with you. The knowledge which I'm sharing with you, okay, will... I want you to reflect on the things which I preach to you. Don't reflect upon your circumstances and your aspiration. If you do, you're going to be consumed." And they were. When they went up into the hill, they were overcome by their enemies. If you try to approach the things of this world on the grounds of your own aspiration, you're going to fail. Because your soul will grow weak by false knowledge, but it grows strong by the knowledge of God. That's why we work with the tools of the covenant, on the covenant priesthood. using the gifts, the callings, the grace of God, government, truth, spirit, prayer, preaching, prophecy. All these things were concealed within Christ, and all these things are revealed because of Christ. The grace of God brings to our soul the things which are in God's soul through these ministry of angels. Now we're going to read about that in chapter 9. So let's start in verse 9 here, or chapter 9. For then verily that first covenant had also ordinances. The ordinances again, which was an order activity for function. The machinery of that covenant was only profitable for those under that covenant. When God empowered it, when he sanctified it, it was relevant for the time. But those things are not relevant today. We are under the machinery of God's covenant, the second covenant. So now here the Apostle Paul is making distinction for our discernment as concerning the Doctor Nicolaitans. We see that many priests were converted when the first few years there after the day of Pentecost. But many of them that were converted or that accepted Jesus being the Messiah did not continue with that tradition. They wanted to introduce or mingle the traditions together. By mingling the traditions together, they were trying to bring a new point of identification. We'll accept Jesus as the Messiah, but yet we want to still maintain these traditions or followers of Moses. Okay, and by mingling these things together, including the tithing and the place of and a place of sacrifice, God had to remove that seat. See, that's why Jesus prophesied that. God has to remove the seat of your confidence in order that your confidence will only lie within me. So that God removed the temple from the Temple Mount until the time of a fulfillment when he would be ready to come back. And of course, this is what's going to be transpiring here shortly in regarding establishing the temple again on a Temple Mount. Well, let's go here to chapter 9. For then verily the first covenant had also ordinances of divine service. See the word divine service there. Its function was to represent God in portions, laying the tracks at the time of fulfillment when John the Baptist would announce the arrival of the Messiah. And the first covenant ordinances in a worldly sanctuary. It was a worldly sanctuary because it was set in a weak environment with a weak structure. It was only temporary. Okay, death would accompany the temporary, but life would accompany the eternal. So Jesus was the bridge. That's why his name is Jesus Christ. That which suffered death would bring life. Okay, the passing and the renewing, the dissolving and the reestablishing. Okay, of a new tradition, a dissolving of an old tradition and establishing of a new tradition, a dissolution for true renewal. Now, Jesus was bringing to the attention of the people a dissolution is at hand, a dissolving of the old and establishing of the new. The old wine is no good and is no longer any valid. It's not valid any longer. I'm giving you the new wine. Okay, now there, verse 2. For there was a tabernacle made. That means at that time a tent was constructed to contain these articles, okay, which represented Christ when he would come. For there was a tabernacle made the first. That means the sign and the token was what prophesied in these things. Okay, Christ was prophesied in these things. So everything that was constructed by the revelation of the Spirit given to Moses, then given to those which constructed it, concerning Aholib and Barzillai, okay, they were to construct these things. Okay, the sign and the tokens was preached and prophesied in these first things, wherein was the candlestick, the table, the showbread, which is called the sanctuary. Open your Bibles to Exodus chapter 25, okay, and we'll be talking some more about that, as concerning the types and shadows. Now, after the second veil, the tabernacle, which is called the holiest of all, which was a symbol, a sign, and a token of yet a better covenant to come. That God established this in the minds of the people concerning the outer court and the inner court, which represents the first and the second, which represents the first covenant and the second covenant. Now, verse 4, which had the golden censer, the Ark of the Covenant. Okay, we can see the Ark of the Covenant even mentioned in Revelation 11. The Ark of the Covenant was seen, but not on earth. It was seen in a tabernacle and a temple in heaven. Okay, God symbolized his Christ with this Ark, which had the golden censer, the Ark of the Covenant, overlaid round about with gold. So highlight the word gold there, and also highlight the word covenant. Okay, now the gold represents the superior, while the wood represents the inferior. The wood representing the inferior also represented man's flesh and death. But the gold which is superior represented the divine and God's life. That which was of death would be swallowed up of life. That Jesus would rise from the dead. So God put a sign and a token within these symbols. So that the time of his fulfillment, the Spirit will recall these things which were set in the conscience of man. So that the gospel being preached would be reciprocated towards, and a conversion would be forthcoming, which shows that they're yielding to grace. Okay, which had the golden censer, the Ark of the Covenant, overlaid runabout with gold, and which had also the golden pot that had manna, and Aaron's rod that budded, and the tables of the covenant. We can see three particular articles were set within the Ark of the Covenant. Government, truth, and spirit. That which was concealed inside was a sign and a token as concerning Christ's ministry. The golden pot that had manna, which also symbolized your spiritual growth. So we see the spirit there. Aaron's rod that budded, which represented government of God. Okay, and also the tables of the covenant, which represented spiritual truth. Government, truth, and spirit. Okay, were inside the Ark of the Covenant so that your faith would be completed coming in contact with this Ark. So we can see that these articles are absolutely necessary for your faith to be made perfect. And that's what Paul says. And when I'm present, I'll perfect that which is lacking in your faith. I will perfect that which is lacking in your faith. Well, what's lacking in my faith, Paul? Me. Stewardship. When I come there, I'm going to perfect that, see? Okay, I'm part of the articles inside that Ark, which you must come in contact with. My presence will bring this completion. Okay, I'm sending this letter before me in order to prepare you for this transition, that you can see that these things are necessary. Government, truth, and spirit. You know, verse 5. Okay, as you prepare your sacrifices here. On top of the ark, there was a mercy seat. Okay, and the mercy seat represented the witness, and the ark represented the record. Now, we call it the record because it dictated your form of activity in this body, in the flesh. And Jesus is a record of our soul because his ministry dictated to us the activity of our flesh, that we would serve God in this manner and with this new form of knowledge and also a new activity and new priesthood. Jesus established that tradition for us in himself, beginning from John's baptism unto his ascension. Must one be a witness with us, Peter said. Now, be a witness with us, which means those which possess this power and this perspective, okay, are qualified to function and to build God's kingdom. Beginning from his baptism unto his ascension, Acts 1:21-22, speaks of this. This is a criteria, okay, for one to have true faith in God. Which the apostles would oversee. They would nurture this and oversee this. So they assigned a person that met these qualifications in order to fulfill Judas's office. He filled by transgression. He opposed the plan of God by aspiration, and therefore he was circumcised from the group. Okay, now verse 5. Now over at the cherubims. I highlight the word cherubims there in verse 5 because we're talking about the angels that sanctify. The invisible angel, which Moses was identifying and following, was now put into a physical form for the visual eye. It was a visual aid for their faith to show the activity of angels, that angels would bring unto us the mind of Christ, a new perspective. This perspective, which even though your carnal eye can see it, but yet you cannot see what's inside the ark because Christ hasn't yet come. But now that Jesus has come and risen from the dead, we now have, we are now functioning with those visual aids. Those visual aids which are concealed, we're using now every day. Where it's manifested. Government, truth, and spirit is manifested in your Melchizedek priesthood. Now for over it, the cherubims of glory. So make sure I highlight the word cherubims of glory. These are powers that enforce. These powers enforce and support your faith. Okay. Under that covenant, these powers enforce the faith of the people. It brought them peace and it brought them plagues. It was their choice. Either peace or plagues. It's your choice. Okay, if you come in contact with me, it must be on my terms, the terms of faith. But if you try to come in contact with me on your own person, if you come into my presence with an evil conscience, then I'm going to bring plagues upon you. And we can see that happened. The chastisement of Israel happened repeatedly. Okay, during the times of the judges, Israel suffered under great hardships until the Lord raised up a judge. God raised up an individual, okay, whether male or female. God raised up an individual. Okay, we remember Deborah and Barak, Samson, okay, and Jephthah, and Gideon. These judges God raised up for the purpose of keeping the people in mind concerning the faith. God raised them up as a sign and a token for the faith of the people. To Samuel the prophet. Okay, so God selected these individuals. You notice that the Torah did not complete it itself. You see, the written text could not complete their faith. It had to be the living steward to do this. This is what the church needs to understand today. That the written text does not bring about the perfection of your faith, but the living stewardship will. When they removed their faith from the living stewardship and put it within the text, Satan then dominated the imagination of their interpretation of that text, so that their whole Christian life was set to try to their whole life centered upon trying to put the text in the proper order, rather than walking in the priesthood. Instead of building the house of God, they were examining and re-examining every brick and every stone. And then they would debate and regarding every brick and every stone. And so those that amassed the most bricks, not that they had, that they at that point that they had their salvation, they didn't. They never built the house of God. All they had was a pile of stone and a pile of bricks. And they always argued and debated and competed with each other who had the largest pile of bricks. Okay? So now the living stewardship is giving, direction for everyone to contribute to build the house of God. We see that in Paul's preaching and regarding building the house of God by the Spirit. Everyone was contributing. Okay, everyone was that was under that first covenant, under Moses' stewardship, those which contributed were of one heart and of one mind. And this is what God is doing today. When the church is of one heart and of one mind, okay, which shows that they have one perspective and they're all laboring together, that's when the Lord's going to come back. The church will be purified then, okay, without spot and blameless. That's when Jesus will come back and rapture his people. But not until then. Until then, we labor, okay, with the tools of the covenant until the full number that God has assigned comes in, and then we're gone. Okay, now over at the cherubims of glory, shadowing the mercy seat, okay, of which we cannot now speak particularly. Now, when these things were thus ordained, the priest went always in the first tabernacle to accomplish the service of God. Now, if you go to Exodus chapter 25, you can see the details, okay, in regarding these symbolisms. Okay, and that's in Exodus 25, when the Lord spoke to Moses. So if you turn your Bibles to Exodus 25, we're going to go over some of these types and shadows. How God first ordained the stewardship. He prepared the priesthood. Now he's preparing the articles for the priesthood. He prepared the priesthood, like in chapters 24, where the Lord already gave to Moses the names of those which will be succeeding there within the priesthood. All right, Aaron, Nadab, and Abihu, and 70 of the elders of Israel. Now in chapter 25, he is talking about, is concerning the contribution. Without the contribution, nothing is going to be constructed. Nothing is going to go forward. You notice, I just want to bring this to your attention, Moses did not do this on his own accord. It would have taken Moses 40 years just to try to get the tabernacle made. Moses did not possess the skills of melting the metal, forming the metal, the craftsmanship, cutting the stones, cutting the wood, setting up the tabernacle, dyeing the ram's skins red. Can you imagine one person doing that? Here's Moses out there. Moses gets up early in the morning, stays up late at night, comes home, soaks his feet, soaks his hands, and Aaron and Miriam are sitting over there playing cards and playing chess. So Moses, when's this tabernacle going to get made? And Moses sitting there, and his hands are swelling, their calluses forming on him. He says, well, it'll be done sometime. As soon as I get some help, it's going to get done. So Moses did not do that on his own. He received a pattern. And there were those which God put the Spirit in order to contribute to build. They contributed their skills. So Moses did not do this all on his own. It's the same thing we see in the book of Acts. The apostle says, it is not prudent for us to leave our prayer life and our study of doctrine to contribute to build or to work with the widows and the orphans. That means widows and orphans of the church. That's the same thing the apostle James brings out in his epistle. The apostle James, when he talks about pure religion, undefiled before God and the Father, is this: to visit the fatherless and widows in affliction, and to keep him and keep himself from spotted from the world. He wasn't talking about as concerning trying to resolve the judgments of God on the wicked. He was talking about that which is within the church, and yet, as we see in the book of Acts. Okay, in the book of Acts, the apostles were caring for those which are converted, and of course there was a dispute brought out about the Grecians and the Jews, and regarding who was being served first and with what. So that's why the apostles assigned 7 deacons to handle this, so that they could give themselves to their responsibility, the things which Jesus spoke to them. And that's the same thing is happening today, that we, okay, are continually giving ourselves to the study of the word and to prayer to prepare the saints, okay, and regarding to construct the house. Okay, we are overseeing the construction of the house. So in chapter 25 of Exodus, as you prepare your sacrifices, we got a few minutes left, everyone brought willingly, okay, as we see in chapter 25 there. Everyone contributed this. Now Moses did not do this on his own accord. This is the offering which you shall take of them: gold, silver, brass, blue, purple, scarlet, fine linen, goat's hair, and all these things, all these tokens are signs. The blue is a sign and it's a token because it represented concerning the deity and Christ. And the blue represented the priesthood that would be joined to it. And the scarlet also represented the sufferings which he would undergo to atone for our sins. The fine linen also represented the righteousness of the saints, the fine linen, which is the labor of your faith. The fine linen represents the labor of your faith because you're not allowed to wear wool. You get wool from sheep. Okay? All right. And so getting wool from sheep shows that you're not to cover yourself with that which is of the nature of man, but by the power of God, the linen. I want you to cover yourself with the power of God, not with the things of man. Okay, so the blue, the purple, the scarlet, and fine linen goes there. Now, these were things that which Paul says, which I cannot now speak particularly. I can't go into detail, which I wish to do. But he touched on that lightly, okay, in regarding the major tokens, the signs, the tokens or the signs which were in those things. Now next week, of course, we'll get into more detail on that. But the knowing there, is which I promised to bring out last week, which I'm going to bring out to you right now, that they may know. Okay, the word know there. So if you go back up to chapter 8, okay, they shall know me. Okay, they shall know me. And so having read these things today, the word know again has to do with there's an awakening of that seed which was put within you by this knowledge. God put within your soul this token of knowledge, that at the time of the engagement, okay, when the sign and the token will come together as mercy and truth come together, okay, when these two come together, there is a cognitive acknowledgement of a fulfillment. We see the word know, K-N-O-W, when Jesus speaks to his apostles, that they may know, that they may know, that they may know. Okay, he says it repeatedly. Okay, that they may know. So take this note here, okay, as we close. Okay, that they may know. Okay, so God sets events in motion through these tokens. God sets events in motion to preach to us the counsel of his plan, which is sealed in a conscience. Okay, and we'll give this in more detail in our upcoming book, The God Code. Buried deep and covered by the iniquity of the moral code. Now, Satan lays layers of false knowledge upon this seed. He lays layers upon it so that man would lose direction concerning his true heritage, that man would flounder to try to find his true origin by digging in the soil and finding bones and broken pieces of pottery. And then man would also try to find his origin through a telescope or a microscope. Okay, our telescope looking out into space, as if perhaps a rock fell down and we came from that rock. We can see that false knowledge tries to keep the water from the nose of the seed, so that the seed will not smell or become alive by the presence of God's grace. It's buried under layer upon layer upon layer of false knowledge. So buried deep and covered by the iniquity of the moral code, the voice of the Lord uses the preaching and the knowledge of truth through the lips of the righteous to call forth the soul into accountability. Now his plan for us, his plan for us is a reward of the eternal inheritance. Everyone is aware of its presence. That's why Adamites like to fly. They have dreams of flying. Okay, they have dreams of excelling the present condition. Hey, going beyond what they are. Everyone feels within themselves that they have some kind of divine origin in, or divine future in them. Okay, something exists within them says, I was born for a special reason. That is, they are acknowledging the presence of that seed which is planted within the seed of the conscience, which shows the presence of God's plan. It's preaching to Adamites, even though they're sinners and atheists, it's preaching to them this perspective of the inheritance. Okay, it's there, and they're aware of it, but they just don't understand its true origin. That's why truth must be preached. Okay, his plan for us is a reward of the eternal inheritance. This is the true heritage of the righteous. See, as a seed carries the image of its parent to mature into likeness for increase, so the token of his kingdom lays sealed in the conscience. It lies dormant until the power of the voice calls it forth to rise, as to rise from the dead. Awake thou that sleeps and arise from the dead, and God shall give you light. Remember Paul said that? Now he's preaching this to Christians. Continue to drink of the cup of my grace, that that which has been planted deep within your conscience begins to spring forth and bring forth fruit. Okay, now the law prophesied to us this sign. The law prophesied to us this sign. Now when a sign, which is the evident judgment, is present with a token, which is power of the vessel, when they embrace each other, then the witness is present. This witness brings to mind a clarity of existence. It brings to our mind a clarity of existence. A knowing. Okay, and this is what the Lord said. When these things come to pass, you shall know. So the living token is in a steward, as also the seal. The sign is also realized in both or one. Okay, so the word know again in the sign, and the word believe in the token. By these things, by the sign and the token, we see the face of God, and by this witness we know him. All those which are listening today, if you like to come in covenant with God, okay, if you you have to begin to seek God, you're going to have to also put aside the barriers of your former traditions and your mindset, and you're going to have to seek him with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, okay, if you want to come in covenant with God. Okay, well, thank you for listening today, and continue to seek the Lord. His grace will abound towards those that seek him out of a pure heart. And this is Apostle Eric von Ersick here speaking. Have a good day, and the grace of the Lord Jesus Christ be with you all. Amen.